So are you going to do one of your intros again?
Yeah, why not?
These are quite entertaining.
Hello and welcome to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast. Brought to you through Motorcycle News and supported by our great friends and sponsors, Babel Cover.
That's it.
That's it. We just let the music fade in there. Doom, doom, doom.
I don't want a pickle. Just want to ride on my motorcycle.
We're here again today. Ant's again missing in action. We need to find out where he is, Charlie.
It's best not to go into why he's not here, really, because we might incriminate him.
Just for the time being.
And he might get arrested because of it. So let's just say he's on gardening leave.
But we are joined by another guest. And once again, we're blessed with international visitors who have flown many, many thousands of miles just to be here in our company today. And especially important this episode because it's one of our great mates and a man who does just the most amazing things in the motorcycle world and for charity. It is none other than distinguished gentleman's ride founder, legend, Mark Howard.
Woo!
Howard. I'm just not looking forward to having to fly back to Sydney straight after this interview.
I know. Well, it's very good of you to just fly in, fly out. I'm guessing, Mark, you're over here in Europe to do a little Europe whistle tour to get things ready for September?
Yeah, I'm here for a week. So basically, we've got some big announcements that we're making on Monday with Triumph Motorcycles. So I've flown over specifically for that in the lead up to DGR. And we also happen to launch DGR in 5 days, 4 days on the Monday. So looking forward to it.
Very cool. So do check it out online. Have a look at the DGR website, Triumph Motorcycles website, to see what Mark's been up to. But for those that don't know, tell us a little bit about the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride and how it all came about.
Yeah, so 12 years ago, basically really started getting into motorcycling. I was a bit of a late bloomer. I was only 25 when I started riding motorbikes. And for me, I didn't have any mates that rode motorbikes. All my mates are basically into cars. And so I started putting together groups of people in Sydney, Australia, just to go riding with, and it was called Sydney Cafe Races. And then off the back of that, I saw this picture of Don Draper from Mad Men, the TV show, and he was in a suit on a classic bike, and I've gone, wow, what a great way to break that stereotype that motorcyclists are, you know, negative to society, that motorcyclists are one percenters. And I thought if we could all get suited up and ride our motorcycles globally through the heart of every city, surely this is a great way to sort of showcase to the people that were walking down the street that, oh, wait a second, these guys aren't bad. They're just your mom, your dad, your uncle, your boss, you know, your friend. And so in that first year, we put the call out through social media and we had 64 rides in 15 countries in that first year. And basically everyone had come back to us afterwards and just said that was the most fun that they've had on a motorbike. And it feels weird, but it's this mentality of knowing that people that you're about to ride up towards are listening to these motorbikes. And then obviously assuming that they're thinking that, you know, oh, wow, there's some big burly motorcyclists coming, and they turn around and they basically see guys dressed up in tweed giving a royal wave as they go past. And I think the highlight for me was at the end of George Street in Sydney, our main street, there was a lady that was standing on top of her car with her iPad recording the whole thing. She had just seen, you know, 300-400 motorcyclists coming through, and we just had sort of cheers and accolades from the police and all the rest of it. And yeah, from the second year onwards is when we sort of decided to make it more meaningful.
Yeah, it's amazing just to think that you got that reach in one on your first year to have that many people around the world just grab hold of that idea, nugget of an idea, and make it reality. It's quite extraordinary, really.
It is extraordinary, but at the same time, I don't know if anybody watches reels or something, and I mean, there's one reel that comes around and there's this one about these guys who, men are just like children, and then you hear this guy ringing some other guy up and he goes, hey man, you want to ride some motorbikes? And oh yeah, let's go ride some motorbikes. And so the excuse to actually go out and ride a bike is always there, isn't it, as a biker?
I think it's, you know, what we do is we operate in what's a niche of a niche. Motorcycling is a niche, let's be realistic. And then we sort of specifically go into the path of cafe races, classic bikes, bobbers, and, you know, old school style. So you're right, as motorcyclists, we connect. And so it didn't take long to grow. I mean, if you sort of fast forward to just before COVID, we had 125,000 riders in 800 cities across 105 countries. And so you've got that level of growth within 6-7 years. And I think that's down to what you're saying, Charlie, which is word of mouth, you know, calling your mates and getting them to go for a ride. And also, I mean, that's one of the positive aspects of social media. I know we focus a lot on, yeah, the negatives. And even I'm at a point where sort of I sit there and go, if it wasn't for DGL, would I still be on social media? I doubt it. But if it wasn't for the Facebook and the Instagram, there's no way that this would have been able to reach that many people that quickly.
And then the added benefit of it all as well is, one, when people do get involved, it's for mental health, it's for charity, it's for that side of it. And then everyone gets together and you meet new people. But I find more and more now that when I go on a ride with friends or on the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride or whatever, is that you're sitting there and you're talking a little bit more meaningful to friends, and you're a little bit more aware of, through Movember, and then on towards what you're doing as well, is you're actually asking, genuinely asking people, how are they?
Yeah, and we've seen that shift massively. I mean, when we first started focusing on prostate cancer, I guess the reason that we did that was because we were told that men weren't talking about it. And, you know, prostate cancer is something at my age that, you know, I don't have to, I'm getting closer to needing to worry about. But when I started DGL, I was 26, 27, it wasn't really something that directly affected me, but I could understand the value in the fact that if we could push this and that our audience is a little bit older than us, that we could literally save lives right away. And so in pushing the messaging, it worked really well. And a big example of that is, I remember when we used to meet up, obviously we talk about motorbikes and whatnot, but ultimately, about a year ago, we had a meetup just to go for a ride. And within our own group, there were two guys talking about testicular cancer and having their testicles removed. That's not a conversation you would expect to hear two big, burly motorcyclists to have 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's something that is perfectly normal in our circles now. And I think that's a testament to the DGR, to the people that take part in DGR, but also to the fact that we've got this amazing charity partner, which is obviously Movember. And men feel more comfortable speaking now than they have ever done in the past.
No, I think it's fantastic. And actually, it was very nice for, actually last night, you stayed in my house where we are now, and JC from Movember was here, and Ben was there last night. We all had a bit of dinner together. And it's funny how all our lives have really connected because of, I suppose, because of JC, I suppose, how we've all ended up together, I suppose.
JC was the reason that we sort of partnered up with Movember. And for us, it was a natural progression because I had been a Mobro since, I think, year two, back when, you know, jumping on a train with a trucker Mo ensured that parents were moving their child away from you, whereas now they just look at you like a hipster. But so ultimately, I mean, JC is...
With the fluff.
Has been that, yeah. JC's been that glue that really brought sort of Movember and DGR together, and that's led to some real meaningful relationships. And, you know, if you look at what we do,
it is a perfect fit, isn't it? Because you're both, well, you're both from the same country, which is
interesting.
But you're both sort of pushing the same sort of feeling and philosophy, aren't you?
So. Yeah. It's about bringing people together. And look at it. I've got two other friends in this room and Anthony Partridge in hiding.
Yeah.
Yeah. What DGR does as well, it gives those conversations a platform, the space to happen, and sets for the rest of the year. It's almost sets a precedent that you can bring people that come each year that are used to the conversations or are engaged with it. But there's new people that are maybe introduced to this narrative for the first time. They come to this big motorcycle event because it looks cool, it's Don Draper-esque, it's tweed, it's aesthetically beautiful, you know, it's Instagram porn in many respects. But then they come and then they hear the conversations, they meet the people, they meet the previous participants, and they understand then that this is a space where you can acknowledge these challenges we all face, you can speak openly about them, you can find a community that will listen within the DGR. And I know you've said previously that you've seen however many motorcycle groups grow from a DGR event and become a 365 day of the year group of riders and support groups.
Yeah, those groups exist globally. Ultimately, a lot of them want to sort of create groups that are based around the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, and we sit there and say, well, no, DGR is a one-day-a-year event. Great to pull everyone together and focus on the fundraising and the outcomes of that fundraising, but start your own group and have that 365. And there's got to be hundreds out there. And that's the thing, right? I mean, people get the opportunity to go to DGR. They might not have a big friendship circle. They might be in a really dark place, but they take the opportunity to go and they meet people that have a similar interest in motorcycles, give them that connection, and you're creating really strong relationships. And there are people that have met as friends. There are people that have met as partners. There's been marriages at DGR. There's a lot of people that have met a lot of people with a really good purpose behind it.
And now all the money you've raised over the years in Movember, that's now going into funding specific projects through DGR as well. And guys like Project Pit Stop here in the UK, who I'm off to talk with in a couple of weeks, actually, for one of their events around Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. And it must be amazing to see all the hard work, all the amazing events over the years now start to be delivered in real impactful programs.
Yeah, and I think that's the part that I guess a lot of people don't understand with DGR is we actually, the way that we've structured with Movember is we get to allocate where the funds go within the organization. So essentially we get a pool of information where we need to sift through and decide where we want to put those funds. And it's a bit of a mix because what we did do about 5 or 6 years ago, we lost one of our ride hosts. And so that's when we decided to start focusing on the mental health aspect as well as prostate cancer. And as you can imagine, when something's not broken, you know, they say don't try and fix it. And we've now introduced this extra element of why we raise funds for and a cause behind it. So in that first year, we sort of sat there and thought, okay, well, let's focus on 10% of funding towards mental health programs. But very quickly, we found out through our audience that they were connecting more so with the mental health than they were the prostate cancer. They've now learnt about prostate cancer. They know to go get checked every 2 years or every year if they've got a history, but the mental health stuff was connecting with them really well. And so we currently fund 50% of everything that we raise goes towards mental health, 50% goes towards prostate cancer research and awareness.
But even when I had, and Ben, you've had it as well, testicular cancer, you know, there is a mental health issue with that.
Arguably the biggest challenge
certainly was for you. I mean, it wasn't so bad for me because when you get over the initial shock that you have cancer, and I freaked out because my sister Talsha died of ovarian cancer and it was a pretty horrible way to go. And so that's where I went. But then they said, listen, this is fine. It's just a blip for you. But I still remember lying in bed, waking up in the middle of the night in a panic before I knew the full story and just wondering whether or not or how I was going to get through it. At least people now, as you say, are much more aware of it so that they can find the conversation and maybe avoid what happened to you.
That's it. It's you know, knowledge is power, and understanding where you're at is a big thing for me. You know, 12 years ago, the knowledge was practical around treatment. It wasn't, nobody was asking a question
emotional.
About how are you doing, how are you coping with this. As a 25-year-old man, how are you dealing with this diagnosis? Then as a 30-year-old man, how are you going to live the rest of your life with no bollocks and all the rest of it and everything that comes with? And there was no support, there was no emotional intelligence around that. There was no awareness on my, because no one was asking me the questions, you know, how are you doing, how are you coping, are you speaking to someone, are you aware of these risks you face from a mental health perspective as you go through that. All of that has changed now. The balance is much better, I think, through the work that Movember have done and other organisations to really put that on the agenda and say, hey guys, look, prioritising your mental well-being at the very point of crisis to make sure you come through and you're equipped to deal with it. And part of that is just talking, you know, it's just that acceptance that it's okay to talk about this stuff, to, you know, it's okay to be weak, show weakness, it's okay to cry. You know, there's the definition of what it means to be a man in this day and age is very different to how it was 50 years ago, 20 years ago, and rightly so. And DGR is a great organization for, you know, say breaking those stigmas down, because you change perceptions, not just of the motorcycling community, but within that community, you change those mental perceptions of probably being a biker, as we talk about a lot. You know, riding is two-pronged. It's a great place to be isolated, but because you're in a helmet, you don't have to talk to anyone, you can get away, you turn everything off, you don't have to communicate with the world, you're just solely focused on being in the moment. But as with DGR, you can pull up in a car park and talk to anyone and everyone and be accepted instantly. And that's a really powerful thing.
I think it's an important one as well for people that are getting a little bit older as well. They might have sort of had their families and lost some friendships along the way just from being too busy. And then they get to a point where they're in their 40s or 50s and they're sort of being welcomed back into the sort of motorcycling fraternity because their kids have grown up. And it gives those guys a really good opportunity to meet, connect, and have those meaningful relationships. And there tends to be a bit of an after party at a lot of DJs around the world and actually enjoy each other's company and have a bit of fun. It's like a motorcycling friendship dating app.
So when you started, you said you came late to motorcycling.
Yeah.
So why did you end up?
I mean,
I think everybody has it in their soul. It's just a matter of someone unlocking it.
No, I didn't have any family or friends that rode motorbikes. I don't know what happened. I woke up one morning and I literally thought, I want to get my motorcycle license. And it was just that. I must have had a dream or something along those lines. You know, laying in bed, those dreams that you have of Charlie Borman as a child.
Global adventurer, Charlie Borman.
Global adventurer.
But yeah, I just woke up and I went and got my license. And then about maybe 3 or 4 weeks after getting my license, I went to Japan for 4 weeks. And I saw the Yamaha SR400, and they were all modified in an individual way. And that was what I connected with. I've always loved Japanese cars. I'm a rotary enthusiast. I've got a fair few Mazda rotaries that are quite rare. And what I connected with was these guys and girls were individualizing their motorcycles. It wasn't that motorcycle looked exactly like that one. They were, every single one I saw was wildly different. And then I saw like the Yakuza ones up on the mountain where they had the big sissy bars and the fairing sitting, you know, a meter up. And, you know, I'm a quirky guy and Japanese is quite a quirky place. And so fell in love with cafe races as I Googled it and found out it was, and then came back to Sydney and bought a Yamaha SR and customized it.
Was Deus open?
So Deus was open and I guess...
Did you gravitate?
Funnily enough.
Did you find yourself...
I didn't know Deus existed until probably 2 years into my motorcycling journey. And then when I found out, I went there, I was like, oh, wow, this place is cool. And obviously became mates with, and became mates with Jeremy and Dare and all the guys at Deus as well. And so, you know, they were a big support. We grew. I've always been about connecting people. So, I mean, hospitality is one thing that I do. Event management, obviously, is another aspect of what we do. And I was running an event called Throttle Roll, which, you know, we would have 6,000 people at a street party, 250-meter long street and mechanical bulls and stages with big live Aussie bands. And the Deus guys supported that as well. So they were always a big part of putting the word out there as to what we were doing in Sydney. And then ultimately everything grew pretty quickly onto a global scale. You know, that one SR500 turned into, God knows, maybe 12 or 13 different motorcycles. Yeah, I do. One of my mates back then actually crashed it and I bought it back off the insurance company. I remember seeing him in hospital and he had the number plate on him and the top of the number plate was dented. And I was like, why the fuck is the top of the number plate dented? And he actually flipped the motorbike.
Oh, wow.
And it landed on its roof. So the chassis actually was really straight, but I ended up putting in an Aprilia RS125 front end on it, and it was a direct bolt in. So a bit of a hot tip right there for anyone that wants to do a cool conversion. And I put the RS125 back end. So it's got disc brakes, the suspension, you can get your knee down on it. And then there's a guy I used to work for, and he got into the SR500s and, you know, threw a bit of bait out at me. And, you know, I'm a pretty competitive guy. So I took the bait and I ended up putting a nitrous oxide system on the SR500 and got an extra 15 horsepower out of her and absolutely flogged him down the main straight. He blew his engine, unfortunately. but I've still got one,
so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've still got most of the bikes that I've ever bought. I don't really tend to let go of cars or motorbikes. I just try and find more places to hide them.
It's funny, people always ask me, do I have any regrets in life? And I don't,
because you're
really
of that age.
They've asked me a long time ago as well, actually. Thank you very much. But I always say I don't have any regrets because everything that you do, it makes you the person you are now. So, and you can't regret anything because, but the only regrets that I ever have are the bikes that I've had to sell. And in particular, I had an SR600R Honda, that big enduro bike. And I still think about that. But I mean, I'm sure I could go and find one and buy it, but it wasn't that one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that one was an amazing find.
Well, if anyone listening bought that bike off Charlie Boardman and still has it, drop us a line.
I'd love to have it
with
back.
A price.
But it's funny how you
sell it to
emotional.
Ben, so Ben can unsell it to Charlie.
Yeah, exactly.
Massive inflation
price. But I'll swap it for a book. But
unsigned.
Unsigned. Yeah. Well, they're more valuable unsigned. I tell you, find one that's unsigned.
That's really funny.
Yeah, and if anyone has an unsigned, I've got signed.
Yeah, I'll sign it.
Yeah, yeah.
The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast, brought to you through Motorcycle News and supported by our great sponsors, Babel Cover. Babel Cover is a British fintech company providing software to empower motorcycle communities. This is insurance powered by the people. It is insurance for riders built on community. Insurance is the ultimate grudge purchase. Babel wants to filter out the things that slow riders down so you can focus on what you love. Community-based, transparent, and digital, Babel Cover offers the next generation of motorcycle insurance.
Once you start riding motorcycles, like you, it completely defines your life, doesn't it? Somehow you'll always get motorcycles somehow work it into your life, which you've done quite well, really, out of.
Yeah, I've never really thought of it that way, but I mean, I guess you can't not look back at the last 12 years and think, okay, that person's journey has changed a lot since he got into motorcycle riding.
His leg over a bike.
It's been...
I mean, it's biblically changed for you. You hadn't have gone to Japan and seen that SR500? 400.
Yeah.
What path were you on back then?
More so hospitality. So I also went into a heads of an agreement in a place in Newtown because I did definitely want to go down the path of using my skills within behind the bar, food service, and obviously being a really social guy to build a diner. So that was what I was working on. It was a diner in Newtown in Sydney, and it was based around classic cars, classic motorbikes, food and beverage. And then ultimately this sort of path shifted me and I thought, okay, well, I'll do this for a couple of years and then I'll get back in hospitality. I'll just donate my time. And then basically one of the guys from Kent over here in the UK gave me a call and said, hey, if it wasn't for you, I'd be dead. And he shared his story. And that sort of was when I call it emotional blackmail kicked in, and I kept on doing DGR and I was living at home with my parents and they're like, when are you basically going to move out? You're 30. Didn't have any money. And I think it was, I just stuck at it. I was doing odd jobs for mates and was trying to figure out how to sort of offload this to a charity or give it to someone that was smarter or better than me at doing it. And then I grew into my own. I sort of got to the point where I've realized that, you know, what we've achieved in this office has been done off our own back. And you have these meetings with all these different people and you realize that maybe, you know, you need to lose that insecurity and you are the right person to take this forward. And so, you know, now it may sound egotistical, but I can stand on my two feet and say, if it wasn't for me, it wouldn't be where it is. But that
you
took a lot
awesome
of time.
You have an awesome team, though.
Oh, 100%.
Like Mikey...
all of them. All of them are amazing.
Yeah. And you have built an amazing team that allows you to do what you do best.
Yeah.
And you empower them to be their best and bring their skills to the party.
And if you look at Mikey, Mikey's been with the team for pretty much since the start. I met Mikey when he was 14 and I was 22. And he did a website for me back then. And we started hanging out then. And I had to meet him. You know, his dad was like, what's a 22-year-old hanging out with a 14-year-old? So I remember going up to his dad.
I mean, especially, weren't you hanging around with...
He had a really good head on his shoulders. And there's one thing that you guys know about me. It's I don't care about age. I don't care about gender. I don't care about culture. If you're a good person, you're a good person, irrespective of any of that, including age. And Mikey was a good person. The best head on a set of shoulders I've ever met. How he operated as a 14-year-old was magical, seeing him being able to take on these projects. And he had the similar attitude to me, whereas there's no dead ends, it's just hurdles. And that was at the age of 14. So I sort of met his dad. I was working with him on under-18s dance parties. We both DJed. There was stuff that we were working on. And his parents were obviously a bit weirded out that this 22-year-old's hanging out with a 14-year-old. So I went and met his dad, and the first thing I did was shake his dad's hand and say, "Hey, I'm Mark, I'm not a pedophile." And he just pissed himself laughing. And to be fair, his parents are friends now as well. It's a really amazing family. And then you've got Ramsey as well, who's been with us for 6 or 7 years. And Ro has been with us for a couple of years. And we've got Derek, that used to be the head of Revit Global Marketing. He works for us out of the Netherlands. And so they're people that I've known for a long time of my life. They're people that I trust. And you are right. I mean, without the team, it wouldn't be where it is. And when you look at my style, which is more so gung-ho, you know, talking to people, getting people on board, winning people over, I'm still a guy that takes pen to paper. Mike is a guy that takes fingers to a keyboard. So everything that I did when I first started, you would see it in the office in these large global maps, and they would have little stickers on them that had a number, and that number would correlate to a notepad that had the information about that ride. Whereas Mikey comes in and shifts everything into a digital asset. So he is pretty much the reason why the systems and controls that are in place operate more efficiently than they would if it was just me working on it with my pen and paper.
There's a huge amount of work goes into it. What seems like a pretty simple idea has complexity, as all simple ideas do when it comes to execution. At the scale you operate, the website you have, all the regulatory protection you need to put in place to ensure people are safe and you can carry on doing it.
Even stuff like GDPR over here in the UK. I mean, just to be able to then have to shift all of our systems to be compliant. There's so much involved. And I think what people sort of tend to forget is the sheer scale of DGR. Like, this year we'll have 900 to 950 rides on the same day globally. And we are in touch, and we are ensuring, and we are making sure that all those rides are in line with what our event's about, that they're all heading down the same path cause-wise, why people are doing it. So we've typically got 950 touch points with just people hosting our events. And then you've got the work with the sponsors. And we've had some fantastic sponsors over the years. The reason why I'm here is because we've got 10 years of DGR and Triumph sponsorship this year. They jumped on board essentially in the second year when we were still tiny, and then have sort of worked with us to grow this as large as it is.
Tell us about the plan.
So what you would have seen by now is a Bonneville T120. I mean, Triumph Motorcycle's most iconic motorcycle.
Got one in my garage.
There you go, with the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride branding. So they're a bike that we both work together in regards to paint, colour, seat, and some small modifications. And there's 250 of them. Triumph have turned around and said, let's celebrate 10 years by doing a motorcycle. So the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride is now a part of Triumph's history. And I mean, it always has been, but it's now immortalized into one of 250 motorcycles.
That's very cool. Because historically, they've done bikes for you, but they've been one-offs as giveaways and prizes. But to have a range of DGR bikes available for people to buy in their dealers. You must sit on the way over here, sat on the plane, just thinking about what you're coming over to do. Have you taken some time to consider the gravity of that Triumph Motorcycles are building 250 bikes about the little thing you started?
Mark is not that intelligent.
I didn't, but I am now thinking.
No, he's not that intelligent to actually think about that, you know. It's just like,
let me just ask my team if they thought about that for me.
But are they now, when am I allowed to go to the bathroom? But is there a benefit from the sale of those bikes? Is there a cut?
Yeah, so November are the beneficiary. So it's definitely going to be a sizable donation to Movember from the Triumph team. The difference is with Triumph is they support.
But they've been wonderful, haven't they, really, Triumph?
They're amazing.
The years. I mean, pretty incredible, isn't it?
And they support a lot of different charities, but anyone that has dealt with, I guess, the Blaws understands that they're not showy people. I mean, they don't need to proclaim what they've done for charity or what they've done for DGR, what they've done for Movember. That's just not how they're wired. But obviously this is going to have to be a little bit different because people are going to expect that there's a part of this motorcycle that goes to charity, and there is.
We went to the London MCN motorcycle show a couple of months ago, and on the Triumph stand, all of the staff were wearing Triumph DGR jumpers.
I did not know anything about that. And then I ended up, someone said to me, all the Triumph stuff.
I think I messaged you.
Were dressed, and I was like, but the thing with Triumph and what people don't understand is ultimately, you're always going to have people that sit there and go, I'll try and just do it for commercial reasons because of the distinguished statements, right? And I understand that. I respect that that's their thoughts. They're not dealing with Triumph directly. We see the passion, and how we see the passion is people that have worked at Triumph and have left Triumph, they're still taking part in DJR. They're still messaging going, hey, Mark, what do you need a hand with? What can we help with? Can we corner Mark? You know, do you need a hand with us sort of helping manage the Facebook pages? The guys that have worked at Triumph, that have worked on DGR, are still in our circle, even though they might be working at a different motorcycle brand.
I think it boils down to the philosophy of Triumph and the people who own it. It's still a private company. He started that motorcycle brand out of passion.
Yeah.
And actually as out of a mistake, because he bought this warehouse and it had all the Triumph logos and everything attached to it. And it was the old Triumph factory. And he just rebirthed that.
I didn't realize that was the history.
And that's how it kind of went. And he was a motorcycle enthusiast anyway. And then when you look at the bikes that they built at the beginning and to what they build now, I mean, they're now one of the top four manufacturers in the world.
So wait a second. You're saying that John buys this warehouse and then also gets the benefit of finding out that it used to be...
The Triumph factory original. And it came with all the Triumph logo and the...
if that's not a score, I don't know what...
Because that's where his money, when people talk about, well, you know, he does make a huge profit, but he's not worried about that. His other business, which is property and stuff, makes plenty of money.
Nobody makes huge profits. And
Dad Jenny said to me once, when I was trying to get what is now the bike shed going over here, he once said to me, he said, Charlie, he said, you can make hundreds of dollars out of motorcycles.
If you start with millions.
If you start with millions. For me, Dad has been a big part of my life. Since I've met him and his enthusiasm.
Yeah, he's definitely created something very special that a lot of people obviously connect with. Yeah. And the team that he's got behind him as well, even Carby from a design perspective. I mean, amazing designer, really great guy, right into his cars, classic cars as well.
Oh, his Porsches, my
and,
God.
And I think for us, I mean, being a car guy, before I was a motorcycle guy, I think that's what led us to down the path of doing the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive as well. So that's been a great one for the last few years, just slowly, slowly ticking along. And then this year you'll start to see us push that a lot more as well.
So that is the same ethos as the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, but car
version. Slightly different. I mean, no one sort of looks at a person that's driving a classic car and goes, oh, look at that guy. It's the Hell's Angels. So we don't have a stereotype to essentially break. And, you know, no one wants to drive an air-cooled car through the city. And to be fair, when you look at 4 to 5 motorcyclists, you know, being the size of a car, essentially, it's easy to move motorcycles through a city, not as easy with cars. So the car side of it is about motivating the guys that have these classic cars to actually head out of the city. And we've got these lovely routes that we do 100, 150 kilometers, finish up at a vineyard or a nice estate, you know, have lunch and then sort of, again, have that social connection at the actual start and end points. And then obviously raise funds for Movember as well. So last year, I think we did around $500,000 Australian dollars in fundraising. Typically, you know, with the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride at this stage now, we do about $8 million Australian dollars in fundraising, which is probably like £1 million.
But you talk about, you know, with the cars, maybe doing it more out in the urban, not in countryside kind of environment. But I'm involved with a friend of mine, Roy Boise, who started the DGR in Guildford, or a group of them started it. It's now right down here, obviously because I live around here, but mostly because there are no traffic lights. And so we have this fantastic ride and we stop halfway through, have kind of a breakfast or something somewhere and then ride on. And it's a really nice environment. It's nice to be part of.
Just antisocial behavior by Charlie, not wanting to see people on the streets.
No, we go through town. We do go through town, but there's just no traffic lights.
Yeah, no, it's nice.
Yeah, but you don't. It's really nice. I understand that, but you miss out on the iconic views and cityscapes of London.
This is now DGR
Come
London.
Come on my ride, not Charlie's.
This is
Come
DGR on my London ride. Host versus DGR founder versus DGR rider and ambassador Charlie Borman.
Don't come on mine. I don't need the logistical nightmares of too many people. It's fine.
Well, to be fair, last time I did a ride with Charlie at the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, he was on a three-wheeled scooter because he couldn't use his left leg.
My left leg. And my right leg.
And I remember looking at Charlie saying, Charlie, can you please not ride at the front because you're going to ruin all these photos with a three-wheeled scooter.
I did have a blanket over my legs because this...
It wasn't the leg that was ruining. It was the scooter that was ruining the photo.
And just to be fair, it was not the scooter. It was the three-wheeled modern scooter.
I couldn't put my legs down to support myself.
It was a very practical, creative way of Charlie still being able to do it. And I appreciated it as well.
I remember there was a guy... That was when we did it at the Olympic Stadium. Yeah. I remember going along and this two guys came up to me and I was... We were all dressed up, and one guy turned to me and he goes, "He said, Charlie, you can't ride that here." And so I had this you know, that rain blanket
stocking.
So I just lifted the rain blanket, and there was this cage with all these wires going through my leg. And he went, "Oh, okay, cover it back up."
I'm just glad that he said that there was a cage covering his leg after he exposed his lower body on a scooter riding through London.
I used to ride after that. I used to ride all through London on that scooter with that.
Because you never need to put a leg down.
Yeah, it was perfect. And I would have my crutches in between my hands, so over my shoulder. And then I would park, and then someone at the bike shed would help me get off the moped
and
park it for me. So that then I could get on my
service.
So I could get on my crutches.
Oh, well.
Because I couldn't get the side center stand down because I didn't have the strength in my legs.
Some people, perhaps. Your wife may say that you were a little overambitious in your recovery timeline
and how
quickly you tried to get back out on two wheels. But that's not for me to say, you know.
Yeah.
I remember that period. I mean, that was a few tough years.
Yeah, 27 operations. But, you know, it was motorcycles and doing things like the DGR and focusing on the bike shed that kind of helped me get through those things, because you have these moments and they, you know, and then saying, look, come on the DGR. And then I was trying to figure out how I could go. And then that kind of occupied my mind for a bit and then figured out a way.
Yeah, I didn't expect to see you because you were an ambassador for us, I think, that year. And I didn't expect to see you. And then I saw you on the scooter. I mean, that's an ingenious way of being able to attend, because, I mean, two wheels at the front, so you never got to put your feet down. It made perfect sense.
Well, Charlie never misses the opportunity to be idolized by his public. So that was the motivation.
Just a little
his ego just needed a little pumping up.
Hey, listen, I can always do with a little ego pump.
Can't we all?
I'm not shy of that.
No, I think
it was at this
that.
Stage in the podcast that Ben and Charlie get up and start hugging each other.
So what's the future?
I think for us, it's really the priority is always DGR, just because of how meaningful it is, and obviously Distinguished Gentleman's Drive as well. So I think we can kick some really big goals in the classic car scene. I think there are a lot of people out there that sort of experience that same level of sort of loneliness that a lot of riders have, especially as they sort of went through that family stage of their life. So if we can get the drive kicking off, that'd be great. I mean, you know, with all these ideas, you put them out to the world, you cross your fingers and hope they're a success. I mean, for every one success that you've seen from what we've produced, there's been, 9-10 failures. It's basically just an unhealthy ratio, but it's the life that we live in regards to running events and different concepts and all the rest of it. So I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be anything too different. I know that the space that we've got in Sydney, where we operate out of, is also sort of going to be turning into a bit of a hangout. So ultimately, like I said to you at the start, what was my path before DGR, and it was always hospitality. We've just put in a developmental approval to turn the warehouse into a coffee shop / donut shop. We also own half a donut startup business, which is making the most amazing fucking donuts I've ever had anywhere around the world. So I just thought, what a great way to incorporate donuts.
You didn't offer me any donuts a few months ago when I was at your place. I feel cheated.
Yeah, I didn't have them there, but they will be next time you're there. And the space is going to turn into a space where people can come, hang out, check out the cars, check out the bikes, play Daytona, have a donut, have a coffee, stay or leave. So I think for me, being a social guy, it's probably going to be me more on the coffee machine with my DGR and DGD laptop mounted to the right of it and trying to balance the 400 different projects we've got on the go at any one time.
Yeah. This would be exciting.
Yeah, I think
it's a really good sweet spot.
It's literally a sweet spot. And I think the funny part,
when I was there a few months ago, I came and you entertained me. You, as usual, drove me to the airport.
Yeah.
To make sure you leave.
Yeah. I think for us, it's just exciting. Something that brings people together when they're bored and lonely. It's a cool project for us to be a part of. And who doesn't like donuts?
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Great. Well, where can people go to find out more about DGR and DGD?
Easiest way would be just to Google Gentleman's Ride, or just head to www.gentlemansride.com or the drive, gentlemansdrive.com. Best way, I mean, social media, again, love it or hate it, is a good way to connect. Like you said earlier, Ben, it's like a bit of bike porn, and especially if people enjoy looking at photos of guys dressed well and girls dressed well on classic motorcycles. The majority of our following sort of tends to be a huge mix of guys and girls, because everyone appreciates how everyone else looks at the actual event as well. So Distinguished Gentleman's Ride is May 21st, which is the third Sunday of May, I believe. And the Distinguished Gentleman's Drive is September 25.
Make sure you do go and check out those dates. Get signed up for DGR. It's going to be good. London's shaping up quite nicely. And thank you. You've been a big supporter of the concept of the podcast since day one, which we're internally thankful for, and just really stoked that you could be here. Sorry?
Internally and externally. Grateful for.
Did I say internally?
Yeah.
It's getting really awkward now when he says he's externally grateful. And we're externally right here. And he's got his legs crossed at a glass table. Really awkward really quickly.
But we are quite grateful. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for spending time with us, mate. It's been an absolute joy to see you and chat with you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Three friends catching up.
I'm now going to go and ride a motorbike. I don't know about you.
A few days later, I climbed on my motorbike and rode it all the way to Hinckley to Triumph HQ, where we caught up again with Mark and Anthony, this time at the official launch of the DGR Triumph Bonneville.
So we're here for a really special event to celebrate Mark's relationship with Triumph and the DGR, and they have come up with this very special bike. It's quite a day, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, 10 years of the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride being partnered with Triumph Motorcycles, and this is our 12th year. It's been an incredible journey.
Awesome. And we're here, Ant's joined us after our chat the other day. Nice to see you, Ant.
Well, it's nice to see you guys. I would have loved to join in the other day, but no one called me.
Did you? Did they cut you out of the car before they arrested you?
No, yeah. The police were okay with it. They airlifted me to safety.
Oh, good.
And they're still looking for the perpetrators.
So it's really nice to see the bike that we were talking about the other day in the flesh.
Yeah, the cool thing about this is the first one is actually going to the highest fundraiser of the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. So the event's on May the 21st, the Sunday, as you as host and you as host and you as ambassador and supporter.
Down in the Guildford, DGR.
London.
There's a little bit of healthy competition between these two gentlemen. But ultimately, highest fundraiser gets this motorcycle, and there's another 249 that will be for sale. With a huge amount of support coming for Movember Foundation as well.
Amazing.
Just last thing to say, you know, Mark, getting well done for everything over the last 12 years. $37 million is very, very, very.
Let's
very
get
cool.
that. Let's get that up to 44 by 44. The end of this year.
100%.
Well done, mate. Guys. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast. Hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. As ever, do make sure you subscribe to get your alerts and share the show to help us grow. You can also follow us on Instagram at TheNodPod. And a big thanks, as always, to our friends and sponsors at Babel Cover. Do check them out online and join the community. We'll be back next week with another guest, and we'll be hitting the road and having a chat with them. Join us next time. Until then, stay safe, be kind, and check in with a mate.